The Oxford Sparks Podcast, Episode 6, Explosions, Part 3. Advances in computing technology mean that today we have more information available at our fingertips than ever before. IBM estimates that by 2020 there will be 300 times more information in the world than there was in 2005. Here at the University of Oxford, big data is being used by many for researching and developing a whole range of things. But what is big data and how will it affect health and medicine in the future?
I'm Gil McVane. I'm a professor of statistical genetics here in Oxford and director of the new Biomedical Big Data Institute. Big data is a term that sort of appeared over the last 5 or 6 years, and it's about the explosion of information that we can capture about ourselves at the individual but also the population level, and make use of that information to make better choices about what cereal we buy or what films we want to make. My interest in what's happening up the hill in Oxford is about using that kind of information to make better choices about how to treat people or why people get sick, and the ways in which different types of information can be informative about those questions.
Okay, so big data is about analysing lots of information. But where does this information come from?
So big data is very much associated with the computer age and the fact that as we go through life, we leave this wake of information behind us. Every time you log on to your machine, you're sending information out to lots of places.
And many large online shops are very good at capturing information about how you interact with the web and then using that information to give you recommendations, for example, on what you might like to watch or what to buy.
What characterises this information is essentially its breadth, the idea that it's not just one type of information you're trying to collect, but it's, you know, what search terms you use, what financial transactions you look at, where you've been on holiday in the last 10 years. So different types of data collected from lots of different places, each with their own sort of idiosyncratic ways of getting information. It's very high volume, so it's high volume on you, but more importantly, it's high volume on lots of individuals. And one of the great insights of big data is essentially that the best way to understand you is to go out into the population and find other people like you and see what they liked or what they bought, or in my case, what diseases they got and how they responded when they were treated. So it's very much a move to an empirical view or a data-driven view. You don't go out there with set hypotheses and say, I'm going to do an experiment to address this particular question. You go out there and you collect a lot of information, and then you let the data tell you what was important in stratifying people, why they got this disease or that disease, or why they responded well to that drug or not so well.
Researchers are essentially searching all this data to see connections that would otherwise be too subtle to spot in traditional studies. With large amounts of data comes power, statistical power. This essentially means that you can be more confident that any relationships or effects you're seeing are real and not just down to chance. The more data you have, the more you will be able to spot subtle influences in potentially complex processes. So what big questions is the Big Data Institute looking to tackle?
In the Big Data Institute, we're going to focus very much on biomedical research. So that's trying to understand human disease mechanisms. But it's both from infectious disease and non-infectious disease. So we're interested in why people get dementia, for example, or why people get atrial fibrillation and what that means for them. But we're also interested in bacterial pathogens. How does drug resistance spread across hospitals? We're also working outside the UK in malaria. We're trying to understand how drug resistance evolves and spreads, and how the microepidemiological processes of how bugs get transmitted from one person to another relate to this sort of larger evolutionary phenomena like the appearance of drug resistance. So it's across the board. It's human disease writ large, and we're interested in problems which solving them will really require bringing together lots of different types of information. So if you think of dementia, for example, you know, dementia is essentially only diagnosed very, very late, but you can imagine there are all sorts of clues as to the fact that you're going that way earlier in life. You know, your financial transactions, what you buy in the supermarket, how often you get out of the house, how often, and what you're typing into your computer. There's all sorts of information you might get out of brain imaging. So there's a huge study underway here called the UK Biobank, which is looking at 500,000 people across the UK, and very high density imaging data of the brain is being taken on a large number of these individuals, along with cognitive tests. And so what you might be able to see is the people who go on to develop dementia have particular signs and signals that you would be able to pick up earlier. But it's not one specific thing, it's this combination of genetics and imaging and biochemical and behavioral and lifestyle factors that we really want to try and look at.
So just from studying what people are doing as they go about their everyday lives, we can start to pick up on signals that might be used by doctors in the future to identify early warning signals. An earlier diagnosis and treatment of all sorts of conditions will go a long way to helping improve people's lives. With large amounts of complex data from multiple sources come major challenges to overcome. What does it take to make big data work for health?
We need people from a very broad range of disciplines. We need, obviously, the biomedical researchers, the people interested in a particular problem and have the drive to tackle it. We need those who interface with the patients, those who are actually working to access individuals with dementia or with heart disease. We need technologists who are trying to push higher and higher resolution ways of actually capturing that information, like your genome sequence or the brain imaging. We need the computer scientists who are great at taking these data and storing them and serving them up to researchers. We need the statisticians who are great at finding the patterns in them. And of course, we also need to work with people responsible for policy and communicating what we're doing to the wider public, because without that buy-in, we're not going to get anywhere, essentially.
So where are we now? What have been the successes so far?
So genome sequencing I see as an important component of what we're trying to do in Oxford. Genome sequencing is a technology that's made astonishing gains over the years. And it's a really good exemplar, I think, of how technology really drives the ability to do science at this scale. For example, it took 10 years and many billions of pounds to sequence the first human genome. Today, I can sequence your genome overnight for about £1,000. So we've moved from a situation where technology was limiting to one where technology really gives you this information pretty simply. Now the big hurdle is trying to understand that and what the genome sequence tells us about why you get a disease or how you're going to respond to a drug.
This is incredibly impressive. At the Wellcome Trust Centre for Human Genetics in Oxford, where Professor McVane is based, they sequence around 500 genomes a year, but the technology exists to handle the sequencing of 18,000 genomes per year, and your genome is a very big place. There are approximately 3 billion letters in the human genome. If you were to read aloud each letter, it would take 9.5 years to finish without stopping. A, T, G, G, A, G, G, C, T, T, C, T, T. Getting a sequence is only the first step, though. The next step is to analyse the differences.
You and I probably have 5 million or so differences across our genomes, but maybe I would understand 1% at the most of those differences. There's a lot there that we don't understand about how genetic variation relates to what happens. But we also know that genetics is a really important factor in almost every aspect of human disease. That's why it's a really key feature. It's also a really important aspect of trying to track pathogens and parasites, because the DNA is a unique fingerprint that tells you this bug is related to this bug. So it gives you an immediate connection between things that allows you to understand the transmission process of pathogens.
The future's looking bright for big data and its power to help solve some big problems indeed.
I'm really excited about big data in biomedical research. I think we've gone a long way in studying individual bits of disease. What we need to do now is to integrate the information, and that's going to require a big data approach. What I want to see us do is to take on some really big grand challenge problems and have a go at them. We may not succeed, but I want us to have a go. Malaria, dementia, heart disease, these are big problems. We're going to have a go at them.
You've been listening to the Oxford Sparks podcast, narrated by me, Lou Sumner, and produced by the University of Oxford. For a full list of credits and much, much more besides, visit our website at oxfordsparks.net.